Marco trying to be a hockey player.
But I am a hockey player, sir. Like you.
I don't play much hockey.
You're a hockey player, sir.
You know they just want you to bleed, right?
Well, I'm here to do whatever they need me to do. You know, if they need me to bleed, then I'll bleed for my team.
You are listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
You have my respect. Whatever that means to you, you got it.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
It's a bit early in the midnight hour for me to go through all the things that I want to be. I don't believe in everything I see. You know I'm blind, so why do you disagree? Take me away, 'cause I just don't wanna stay. And the lies you make me say are getting deeper every day. These are crazy days, but they make me shine. Time keeps rolling by. All around the world, you gotta spread the word. Tell them what you bet.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show, Strictly Talks Hockey. I am Teebs, here with you tonight. With me, as always, Jason. How are you, sir?
I am doing quite well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hanging in there?
The weather is beautiful.
You know what? No doubt, I will take these cooler temperatures over the 40-degree and 100% humidity any day.
I was literally dying.
It was brutal. I mean, we were joking around about, you know, trying to do yard work and stuff, whatever, but, like, you went out there, and it was legitimately, like, and everybody laughs because you talk about how it's energy sapping, right? But legitimately, you get out there and you're just like, I don't want to be out here.
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to do anything.
I'm done with this. So, song you're hearing in the background as we get set up for the hockey show here, in honor of one of the longest feuds in music history coming to an end. Liam and Noel Gallagher announced on Tuesday that they're putting the band back together, as Oasis will play 14 dates in Great Britain and Ireland in 2025, with the possibility of expanding further into Europe, maybe even worldwide, coming through in 25-26, if they can stop from punching each other's lights out.
Yep.
The song you're hearing is the 1998 single All Around the World, which is where we're hoping the tour will go, from Oasis' third album, Be Here Now. It was written by Noel Gallagher. And I didn't know this, but the full version of the song is a whopping 9 minutes and 38 seconds.
Oh boy.
It became, when it hit number one in the UK, it became the longest song ever to reach number one in the UK singles chart.
Which is incredible. Like,
and you think about some of the songs that have gone that far, like Bohemian Rhapsody and stuff like that. 9 minutes and 38 seconds officially is the longest song
that is
ever.
It's very... It's not often that you have a song that is in any way that long. Like, the thing about Bohemian Rhapsody was, like, it was just an incredibly, even for the time, it was incredibly long.
Yeah.
And that was part of one of the reasons why they didn't think it was going to be as successful as it was. But, like, 9 minutes is wild.
So, a little bit more history on this if you want a little bit more. Again, released in 1998, Noel Gallagher started writing it in 1992.
Jeez.
And when I was asked about it, in terms of him putting it together, they were going to put it on the first album. The very first album that came out was going to be the final track on the very first album.
Yep.
And the record company told them they didn't have the money to hire the orchestra that you hear in the background. So again, there's strings, there's horns, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in the background. And the record company said, we don't got the money for that. You're not doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so he was all disappointed. And by the third album that came out, Gallagher had hired two orchestras to play in the background.
That is an amount of petty that I aspire to.
That's right.
To.
That's fantastic. So,
I was honestly so surprised, like, seeing that they were going on tour.
I know.
I was like, Don't they hate each other still?
Again, I'm pretty certain that we're going to hear about a fight at some point during this tour. So.
This tour is not going to end well.
No, no. But, I mean, a little 90s nostalgia for you as we fade out to Oasis, get into the hockey show here, and have a little fun with that as we... I always like to do a little music history off the top there, but a little bit of fun right there. Let's get into some of the topics today because there's a lot of stuff that went on over the last 2 weeks. If you missed it, Logan Andrews, that interview last week was fantastic.
Yeah, it was great.
She is so well-versed in hockey and sounds like she's really excited to get to Ottawa and play for PWHL Ottawa. So, yeah. Carla, you know what to do.
Yep.
Put her on the roster.
We are slowly...
Mike Hirschfeld, you know what to do. Give her number 37.
Yep.
Don't make the mistake.
Figure it out.
Yeah. Get it going.
Very good reasons. But we're, like, very slowly going to just interview every member of that team eventually.
That Ottawa team is going to eventually be... Like, this is just going to be the PWHL Ottawa show at some
exactly.
point. Exactly. I mean, they're so, like, forthcoming with, like, yeah, we'll do that. That sounds fun. So,
yeah.
I mean, hopefully we can get a few more people and have some more fun with that. But we'll see what goes on. But... let's start with some of the moves that happened, because there were some pretty, I'm going to say, some blockbusters that happened over the last couple of weeks. We'll start with the biggest one that ended up seeing one of our favorite players. And again, for people that in Winnipeg, and I know that this was going around on social media, and people in Winnipeg were dying for them to bring Patrick Laine back to Winnipeg.
Yeah.
A, you can't fit him into the cap no matter what you do. And B, why? Not why, but everybody's like, oh,
there's a very good reason.
It's low risk, high reward. And I'm going, but it's not, though, at $8 million a season.
No, it's not. And he's not the Patrick Laine that he was when he left. He's had some issues with injuries, staying healthy. He's kind of had to, you know, knowing a little bit more of like what kind of went on in that time and how bad it was for him. It's surprising how well he performed.
I would say I'm not surprised how well he performed, considering that, like you said, some of the stuff is going on. I'm shocked that he didn't actually, it didn't really, I mean, it affected his game, and certainly you could see that in the way he played the game. I'm not going to say he didn't, because, I mean, you could see that on his face when he was out there, you could see. But the fact that he still found ways to elevate his game to highlight real levels shows you that he still is a legitimate hockey star.
Yeah, and it's always going to be a kind of a what if for Jets fans. Like if things broke differently, and if maybe some certain people stepped in at certain times and made certain changes when they should have, what could the Jets have looked like with a Patrick Laine? Like we probably wouldn't be going through the situation with Nick Ehlers that we're going through, where he's kind of in and out and they're going to move on from him, they're not going to move on from him. If it was the Patrick Laine Nikolaj Ehlers show, from what it looked like it was going to be at the beginning of when Laine showed up.
But, I mean, you also have to consider the fact that the Jets have Vilardi, Iafallo, and Kupari now because of him.
Yeah. In the long run, it does work out, and it just changes the team. It's just, you know, it's going to be... You get a guy with an unworldly shooting talent at second overall, your first ever time drafting second overall as a franchise. You get a cornerstone, and great, over the years, you've turned that into Pierre-Luc Dubois and then the Iafallo Kupari Vilardi trade, and you've gone from one piece to three pieces, but it still is going to be like, what if? And I don't fault Jets fans for being like, hey, what if he comes home?
I do, though, and I'll say this because we get nostalgic about every single player that's ever worn a Jets jersey. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to put that on Patrick Laine. He's a great player still. He's still young enough that he could definitely be a game changer.
And he was a player that was openly saying, like, I want to be in Winnipeg.
I like it here. I like playing here. I want to be here. But again, we need to temper this nostalgia. It's a business, folks.
Yeah. Well, it's the same kind of mentality that's gotten us with, you know, the coaches that have been through the revolving door and the guys that are involved in the guys that have long-term deals that probably shouldn't.
Right.
Because there's this mentality of, you've shown a little bit of loyalty. You say you like the city. We're going to lock you up to an 8-year deal. Please don't leave.
But again, this is 1980s, 1990s thinking, and we're in 2024. Like, we need to realize that it's a business. It's going to move forward.
You are at the top league in the world.
And Montreal, who had the cap space, who legitimately has enough room and enough young players that they need somebody maybe a little bit more veteran, made the deal.
Yeah.
Montreal traded Laine in a 2026 second round pick in exchange for defenseman Jordan Harris. I'm not saying that Jordan Harris is a bad guy to bring back. He's a good young player. You know, good for him in terms of getting everything going.
Columbus needs bodies. at the end of the day. Like, they need bodies.
Harris is going to be a good player for somebody at some point. He might not be your top pairing.
No.
But Montreal. Sorry, I said Columbus traded him. But Montreal, or I said Montreal traded him. Columbus traded him to Montreal for that 2026 second round pick in exchange for Jordan Harris. Jordan Harris has a reputation right now in Montreal as being one of the best community guys they have, which I think for a Columbus, they need desperately to bring those fans back.
Yes.
Because if they don't get those fans back, that I can't see that team just, you know, eking their way through another season. They need to have that guy out in the community that's going to do real good for them, where people can go, I like that guy, I'm going to go support him.
Because people don't realize the fact that Columbus had that for a while.
For a while they did, yeah.
Yeah, like this, that team was really big in the market. There were guys that were super, like, you go all the way back to like the Rick Nash days and his involvement in the community. You had, obviously, you had Nick Foligno being super involved in the community. Right, you've had guys over the years, but you've lost those guys for very similar reasons over the time, and you've kind of analyzed some of the decision making that's gone on in the last few years has really soured that and distanced that relationship between the team and the community. So having somebody like Harris come in is great, and you're kind of getting out from a situation where you knew you could not bring him back.
Right.
You knew Laine didn't want to be there, was not going to, if he even came back, was he going to be what you needed him to be?
So his comments during that, after the trade, were a direct reflection on that. When he said, quote, when you're not enjoying whatever you do, you're probably not going to be able to perform. That's where I've been at.
Yep.
I haven't been enjoying myself for a while, but now I'm happier than ever. Off the ice, obviously. I've done a lot of work on myself to get me back to a point where I'm actually super excited about playing in a new place with new teammates in a new city.
Yep, and him and his partner have started this...
That charity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's obviously big for him as well in terms of making sure that people are getting there. He's going to a young coach, a guy who's played with a sniper like him in Marty St. Louis. I mean, people are going to go, oh, well, you know, Stamkos, you know. Stamkos scored 60 in that season where he was on the same spot that Laine wants to be on the power play.
Yeah. And then
this is a setup for Laine to really be that guy again.
Before that, you had Le Cavalier. Like,
yeah, exactly.
He knows how to play with guys that are like Patrick Laine, and I think the big thing is that, you know, while the last two stops he's had have been relatively small, low-key markets, like Winnipeg certainly is more of an elevated market in terms of the fishbowl that is Canadian hockey.
Yeah.
But, you know, ask any Jets player, like, fans in Winnipeg will leave you alone. They will let you kind of just live your life and do whatever. And Montreal is not that. It's a much more passionate fan base, but I think the situation that he's walking into is much more beneficial to his situation.
See, now I disagree. It is a passionate fan base, but I think that away from the rink, these guys just blend in as well. And I'll say that because we've seen all those French players over the years play there, right? Like the Drydens, the Robinsons, the Rocket Richards, the Jean Béliveaux, and they're out there and they get noticed and people, oh, hey, you know, hey, Mr. Béliveaux, hey, Mr. You know, whatever.
Well, I'm talking about like the tabloidy stuff that comes out.
But I agree with that as well. But I'm just saying, like, these guys can blend in pretty well in Montreal if they legitimately just keep their nose out of trouble at that point. So
exactly. And for a guy that's not going to be the guy on that team, I think is a perfect situation for him.
I mean, he can be, but he doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
That's the nice part. The one thing that I really like, though, and I think this we can't gloss over this fact. Again, the trade's going to work out great for both sides from what it sounds like. Montreal's really happy. Columbus gets the cap space they need in order to sign, you know, future players like David Jiříček, Chinakov, and Fantilli, who all those contracts expire at the end of next year.
Jeez.
So they have $16 million in contract space now. They have to have that space opened up if they're going to keep those young guys together.
Yeah, and Montreal gets a guy that can score.
Well, big time for them
if
they can get him going. That's exactly it. But again, I don't want to gloss over the fact that mentally, Laine looks like he's good again. He's going to a place, he's going to a team where mental health seems to be a higher priority for everybody. Where, I mean, Marty St. Louis doesn't yell at players. He doesn't go after players. He'll take you, pull you off to the side, have a discussion with you about what's gone on, and then we'll let you get back to what you're doing, maybe with a renewed sense or with a renewed sort of focus on what needs to be done.
Not a Mike Babcock or John Tortorella situation, maybe?
And I don't know if either of those. I mean, Mike Babcock would be a bad example. Obviously, that would be Tortorella. I think has softened a little bit. But when you look at the guys that were in Columbus that really didn't do a lot of coaching.
Yeah.
This could be good for him because Marty's played at that level. He's won Stanley Cups. He knows what it takes to win. He's now transferring that to the coaching side of things, and it looks like guys are responding to him. Yep. I think it's really good that Laine is going to a place like this where there's a younger coach who has that experience, who can go, you know what? I was in your shoes once. I can take that load. I understand the load you're carrying.
Yeah, and it reminds me much of like Marty St. Louis reminds me a lot of kind of what Rod Brind'Amour's done for Carolina.
Yeah, right.
Like Rod's much more like intense and he's going to yell. But I think he has the intensity that Rod Brind'Amour has where like you know not to mess with Marty St. Louis. You know he knows what he's talking about. You know he's going to motivate you and get you going, but he's like the kind of coach that you will go through a wall for. Because he sticks by you, he gets the best out of you, he holds you to a high standard, but he's also there to support you and like be there with you. And yeah, I think it's a great situation for Laine. I think it's a good you know, it's a good situation for Columbus to kind of get away from that situation and get a guy back that I think will help their team in the short term and in the long term.
Yeah.
And for Laine, he gets to occupy that kind of Phil Kessel in Pittsburgh role.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because Phil Kessel was the guy in Toronto and it did not work because he just doesn't play the style of game he's not the kind of person who fits being the guy he was in Toronto. But when he has people like Malkin and Crosby and Letang over there being the guy for the team,
he can
just kind of go about doing his thing, playing good hockey. And, you know, Laine's got Cole Caulfield there. He's got Nick Suzuki there. He's got Juraj Slafkovský there. Like, guys that can take that attention and probably play more of that, like, I'm the guy role, and he can just be there.
Slafkovský's, like, over the moon about playing with the Steelers too, right, which is kind of cool.
That'd be unreal.
It's funny, though, because reporters asked him on the Zoom call, at the end of the, at the very end of the thing, you know, there was another Finn that was pretty much honored pretty highly in Montreal when he was there, in Sakakoivu. Mm-hmm. And they asked him, you know, are you going to follow in his footsteps, you know, try and be that guy? And he said, quote, I don't know if I'll be able to do as good as he did, but I'm going to try my best to be as good as he was in Montreal, unquote.
Yep.
That, to me, right there, says this is a guy that's A, humble coming in, and B, don't expect me to score 50, but if I do, cheer me all the same.
Yep.
And again, I'm not saying that he will. I'm not saying he'll score 50 at all, but at the end of the day, though, let's remember to give Laine a bit of a break here.
But what that
he's not being asked to score 40. Mm-hmm. They want him to, but he's coming in as an older player to help some of those younger players and to score a few goals. That's basically it.
But what that tells me is that he's kind of back to his original self,
right?
Because like, remember when he got drafted, or it was right before the draft, when he did that Zoom interview,
right?
Like the FaceTime interview, when he was in bed, and like that's the guy. Like that's the guy that I remember. He's like, oh, he's gonna do so well in Winnipeg. Like, you know, just that relax. He's like, I'm here. I'm going to work hard. I'm here to like just do my job, go to the rink, play hockey, have fun. I get it. It's a game. He's coming in feels a lot more laid back and kind of just ready to, and more confident. Like, not lazy, but because I think that's the label that he gets quite often because of that attitude. It's kind of like a William Nylander situation where it's like, you know, he's just relaxed. He's just very European about it. He's like, I know what I can do.
Yeah.
I'm here to work. I'm here to do to do my best. I don't need to talk the talk. I'm going to walk the walk.
So we go from Laine, who sounds like he's in a good place, to a guy who might have found like himself in a good place, as Yaroslav Askarov was traded by the Nashville Predators to the San Jose Sharks in exchange for prospect David Edstrom. He's a forward. Goalie prospect Magnus Krona. And a conditional first-round pick that was previously the Vegas Golden Knights pick. It is lottery-protected, top 10 protected. So the Sharks will have the choice to transfer either their own first-round pick or the Golden Knights selection, depending on which is higher. So I look at that and I go, Nashville did okay. Nashville needs to get some good young players again. Getting a top 10 pick is certainly going to help. I don't know if Nashville's or if San Jose is going to get out of the bottom third of the NHL this year. So one of those two picks is going to be at least decent for Nashville. But to have a guy buried behind UC Soros, yeah. who said, I'm not coming to camp unless I play.
Yep.
Which you can't really guarantee him because he gave Soros the 8-year deal.
Yeah.
To get a first round pick and a couple of decent prospects, okay, no problem by Barry Trotz. He did the best that he could. But I think for San Jose, this ups their rebuild in a big way because now you have a guy who considers himself, whether or not he proves it is a different story, but who considers himself a legitimate number one goalie in the NHL.
Exactly. It's like, it's that situation where, you know, for a very weird analogy, but you don't get a thoroughbred to pull a stagecoach, right?
I get that.
Like, you don't pull in a guy, a blue chip prospect like Askarov, and ask him to be the number two behind UC Soros, because that's not what he's built for.
Right.
That's not what he's there for. That's not what his potential says. That's not what, you know, it's nice having two fantastic goaltenders, but you're not going to get out of him what you need as a backup when he's a guy that's built to be a, you know, a number one goaltender.
Right.
San Jose just threw their rebuild into overdrive, bringing him in. Like, this is, if he can get him to stick and perform up to potential, they've got another Evgeny Nabokov on their hands, a guy that can be a mainstay in goal for them.
Yeah.
And then for Nashville, like, let's not discount Krona going the other way. Like, that's a guy that can develop into a solid backup for UC Soros in Nashville.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, it's kind of a goalie situation for goalie situation. It's like a perfect marriage of swapping these two netminders, and then you throw in the other prospects and picks that Nashville got in the trade, and it kind of works out for both teams. I'm really excited for San Jose because now they've got kind of really the make or break position figured out. More like what it looks like, and
to a degree,
and then you kind of fill in. You've got forwards up front. You might even like have a chance of getting Gavin McKenna in the draft next year. It's just kind of you're starting to fill in the pieces and seeing how they develop.
But if you're San Jose, and again, you signed, you know, Askarov for a two-year $4 million deal. So I mean, he's around for the next two seasons at least in the interim. But if you're San Jose and you've got all of these good young players that you've acquired now that are all coming up together.
Yep.
This is the time where, and again, people are going to say, oh, well, you know, they signed Toffoli for this ridiculous amount. Yeah, you got to have a couple of guys in there.
Yeah, you got to teach them how to do things.
Who know how to do this.
Well, you don't want an Edmonton Oilers situation.
No, and I was going to say.
Or a Chicago Blackhawks, what was looking like the Chicago Blackhawks situation, where they had young guys coming in and nobody to teach them how to be an NHLer.
But I was going to say, like, this is the kind of situation where if you're a GM and you're putting this together, you're getting all of these individual pieces to come together at the right time where they're all going to grow together. This is, and I don't want to put this, again, this is going to sound awful because I hate doing these comparisons, but this is legitimately what the Edmonton Oilers did in the 1980s with their young team.
Yep.
They had five or six good young players they brought in all together at the same time with Gretzky in the middle, Messier, Coffey, Anderson, they got Grant Fuhrer, you know, all those players, and all of a sudden they exploded onto the scene and you were like, holy crap, they're really good. Not saying San Jose is going to have the same success and the same explosion, but in like 3-4 years, this San Jose team could be back near the upper echelon of the Pacific Division.
Well, I look at it as like the Pittsburgh Penguins when Crosby showed up, right?
Well, I mean, that's generational, but yeah.
But like you have three really great pieces that have come in. You have a goaltender in Marc-Andre Fleury. You've got your marquee player in Sidney Crosby. You've got his second in command of Evgeny Malkin. And then you're bringing in all these other guys from the system. You're bringing in veteran presences to teach them how to play. You've got Sidney Crosby living in Mario Lemieux's house. Like, you've got the right mix at the right time. And then I also think of like Chicago when that kind of dynasty kicked off, where they had Keith, they had Taves, they have Kane all coming in. You throw in Seabrook into that mix. You throw Byfuglien into that mix. Eventually, you had Crawford come in. And you got Jalmerson coming in. And you're kind of adding all of these pieces that are coming in. And they're all around the same age where they can lift up through the system together. You look at that, and like that's exactly what San Jose's got on their hands with all of these players that are coming in. They've solved really kind of the riddle of goalies are voodoo. Like, they could have just drafted a guy in the sixth round, and he turns into Connor Hellebuck. You never know. Or you draft a guy in the first round, he turns into Andre Vasilevsky. Or you draft a guy in the first round, and he turns into Rick DiPietro.
Or you draft a guy in the ninth round at 219th overall, and he becomes Evgeny Nabokov.
Exactly. I think they are in a fantastic situation, and like hats off to Mike Greer for what he, I know he's not going to win GM of the Year heading into next year, but like the program he's putting together there is pretty impressive.
It could pay dividends in a short amount of time. Yeah, I'm not going to deny that. I mean, again, young team, very young team, still needs a little bit of, you know, that NHL sort of grittiness to be, you know, plowed through in terms of them figuring out how to play at that level. But with the talent alone that they're acquiring, it looks pretty positive on the West Coast.
Like, we are how many years removed from that run to the Stanley Cup Finals that they had, that San Jose had?
Probably, what,
was 7, 8 years? It was like 16?
17, I think.
17, yeah. Yeah, it was 17, because 16 was Nashville.
Penguins were 17, 18, yeah, right, yeah.
So, it's interesting to look back, because it's not that long ago where this team kind of just bottomed out, where you still had the pieces, Vlasic and Couture are still there, but it's like, you had Joe Thornton nearing the end, you had Patrick Marleau nearing the end, and you had like all of these pieces that were kind of floating around in this team trying to like keep the engine humming,
right? Yeah.
And it just never really worked out, and then it just fell apart, and very like relatively quickly in terms of the scale of how things happen in the NHL. Like, this is not a Buffalo Sabres rebuild that's just going on and on and on and on ad nauseum, or an Oilers situation where it took drafting literally the best player in the world to turn things around. They have just really just turned it on a dime and started going in the right direction.
But I mean, again, you spread that over 3 or 4 players and it becomes much easier, right? And that's essentially Will Smith, and they got all the young players that are coming in there now. Like, all of those guys are going to be contributors at some point. You just kind of go like, this is going to be a good team at you know, probably in the next 3 or 4 years for sure, but it could be as soon as, you know, 1 or 2 years, depending on what happens. So another trade that went down that kind of solved the problem here in Winnipeg was that Rutger McGroarty was finally traded to Pittsburgh last Wednesday in exchange for 2023 first-round pick Braden Jaeger. Not really surprised to see this trade go down, although I was surprised to see it go 1-for-1, although Jaeger is a guy that I think that Winnipeggers will come to like. Good young player. Willing to go into the dirty areas, willing to go score goals in front of the net if he has to, but not afraid to dangle if he gets a chance.
Prototypical just prairie hockey player. Yeah. Like, he's kind of the lunch pail kind of guy that when you associate like prairie hockey, that's the kind of guy you're looking at. And he's from Saskatchewan. Makes sense.
The big thing was the McGroarty interview today that went down, and again, we're not a lot of information here about what's gone on, but he came out and was asked a very direct question, direct about why he didn't want to go to Winnipeg.
Yep.
He's 20 years old, remember? 20 years old.
Yes.
And his response was, quote, "My agents talked to them, then I talked to them, and I wanted to be upfront and honest with them and tell them that I wasn't going to be signing for them. I got nothing but respect for those guys. They handled with a lot of class, and I wish them nothing but the best," unquote.
But you remember the quote where he said he put the jersey on for the first time and it didn't feel right?
Yeah.
Where do you get that attitude from?
I understand that McGroarty's looking for a shot here, and he wants that NHL shot. I'm not going to deny that he's not going to get it in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's thin down the middle after Crosby and Malkin. Maybe even thin down the middle with Crosby and Malkin, based on age. But I look at this and I go, you're 20, and you're going to Pittsburgh where they've historically not had a problem with centermen.
Yeah.
And you're going to be that guy who comes in and goes, all right, I'll take a shot at this. And then if you fail miserably,
it's going to look real bad on you.
Right.
Like, you're not an Eric Lindros where we knew what Eric Lindros was going to be. And his attitude going into getting drafted by Quebec, entirely justified.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, not justified as in, I think it's right, but justified as in, he didn't want to play there, and he made it very clear.
He said, don't draft me. And then they drafted him anyways. This is not a, you know, it's just, I know it's players using their leverage and using, like, young players using the tools at their disposal. Like, we're going to mention him in a bit, but Cutter Gauthier knew the leverage that he had in the situation he was in. He's like, I don't need to sign here. I don't need to do this. I can wait until I become a free agent, and I can just go where I want. I can Adam Fox it and just pick my destination from there. It's the attitude of, I get to come in, I want to be the guy, and if you're not going to let me be the guy and give me the shot right now and get me in the and provide me a path right to the NHL, I don't want to be here. And I know it's an issue with the Jets. I know that there's this logjam, and they keep shooting themselves in the foot by signing these, like...
But is there a logjam in Winnipeg when there's no second-line center yet? That's my question.
No, but the Jets are putting a logjam in there. Like, well, yeah, like, but Kevin Cheveldayoff's creating a logjam.
But the Jets, rightfully so, with a guy who hasn't played one lick of a second in the NHL yet. Like, McGroarty was great against other 19-year-old, 18- and 19-year-olds at the World Juniors, and nobody's going to take that away from him.
Yeah, he looked great.
But nobody's going to say that McGroarty's going to look the same against 26- and 27-year-old centermen.
Exactly.
Like, Sidney Crosby couldn't win a faceoff in his first year in the NHL, despite him coming out as the best player out of junior hockey.
Yeah.
Could not win a faceoff. And he worked on it, worked on it, worked on it, worked on it, worked on it.
And that's Sidney Crosby.
Right. And the same thing goes for Connor McDavid. Got the same treatment. Came out of junior hockey as the best player in the world. Came into the NHL. Could not win a faceoff.
Yeah.
So don't tell me that you're ready to go at age 20 when there's legitimately a shot where you could need some of that season.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to compare... Again, let me make this very clear. Nobody's comparing McGroarty to Crosby and McDavid in terms of skill level.
I compare him to Cole Perfetti.
But I look at him, though, and I think I look at him more like a Kevin Hayes right now. Kevin Hayes came out and was like one of the top, you know, top players to come out of college. And then Kevin Hayes hit the NHL and was like, that's it? That's all you got?
Yeah.
And I'm not taking anything away from Kevin Hayes. He played here. Was a good player in Winnipeg, despite him being used poorly by Paul Maurice.
Yes.
But the fact that you come in with this heavy sort of, I have all this college experience and all these college points, doesn't mean a lick when you get to the NHL.
Yeah. Like, you still need to prove yourself. Like, I know that there's an issue where Kevin Cheveldayoff loves to, like, bring in these fringe guys to fill out the lineup and blah, blah, blah. And there's a long history of the Jets not trusting young players to take that leap. But you still need to come in and put in the work and try and earn it. Right? Like, Cole Perfetti came in. He's a regular NHLer now. He's not where they want him to be and expect him to be. He could eventually turn into that second-line center. Like, I could see Cole Perfetti and Brad Lambert on a line together just tearing it up in Winnipeg. Like, imagine Cole Perfetti between Nikolai Ehlers and Brad Lambert.
I think it would be
just,
I think that,
terrorizing the
I
NHL.
I think that second line would just be an absolute nightmare for people.
Exactly. But Cole Perfetti came in. He earned a spot, a regular spot in the lineup. It took him a bit to get there, but he's an undersized forward that's trying to earn that position. And he's trying to develop into an NHLer. That's the situation McGroarty's in, right? This is not a Jacob Trouba situation where the Jets literally don't have a better option than him coming out of college. Put him on the first pair. Put him with Dustin Byfuglien. Let him figure it out.
But I look at this and I go,
this is a team that's challenging for the playoffs. The expectation is the playoffs.
Right. But
at minimum.
Again, I look at this and I go, this isn't a player that's coming in that has the same cachet as a guy like Paul Kariya, for example.
Yes.
Who played NCAA hockey, was exceptional in NCAA hockey, went and played for the Ducks on a very bad Ducks team.
Yes.
And led the team in scoring because he's legitimately their only option. But I look at this as like more of a Brett Hull.
Mm-hmm.
Hull had exceptional stats in college, came to Calgary, found out very quickly.
The NHL's a different game.
NHL hockey ain't the same as college hockey. I got to change my game pretty quickly. And I think Rutger McGroarty is going to find that out as well. And I'm not saying that to be negative about McGroarty. I just think that he's got this.
Yeah. I still expect him to be a good player.
Right. I just think he has this perception that he's going to be able to step in and excel like he does at college hockey. And I go, that's never really happened, though.
No.
I mean, a couple of guys maybe, but
they're more the exception than the rule.
Even Marty St. Louis, who went through the college system, went to Calgary, had to get waived. Right, had to get waived and go down to the minors for a couple of times before he actually figured out how to play hockey at this level.
Like I think it was bad advice, honestly. I have maintained this from the beginning. He's getting bad advice from his camp. Like, you're not that guy. You are not. You are the probably. I think he is the first player from Nebraska that has been drafted in the first round in the NHL.
Possibly. Like,
I think he might be the first NHL player from Nebraska. You're not all that. All right? You were a mid-first-round pick. You're not the first overall guy. Mm-hmm. You're not Macklin Celebrini coming in. You're not even like Shane Wright coming in at fourth overall. Right? You need to put the work in.
But it's a different era now as well, where guys legitimately understand that if they don't go to the A, again, Jason Spezza went to the A.
Yeah.
If guys don't go to the A, they're never going to figure out how to play in the N, and that's the big thing. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a development league for that very purpose, mm-hmm. and that's the whole point of it. So we'll see what happens at that point, but I mean, at this situation, I don't know if McGroarty is going to figure that out unless he goes and plays for Wilkes-Barre. And understands that the AHL is the place to be if you're going to become an NHL player.
Also, apologies to Jake Gensel, who I've been informed is from Nebraska.
Oh, Jake Gensel. Yeah. There you go. Jake Gensel getting in there. Good job on that, Skip. Skippy's out there doing our research for us. Good for him. Final sort of big thing to bring up, because you were just talking about bad advice. There's two more things we're going to bring up, actually, in terms of this. First one, Edmonton's, I'm going to say, restocking of the cupboards. A little disappointing. Now, if you haven't caught up, here's what the Oilers did. Two offer sheets came in.
Yep.
Philip Broberg and Dylan Holloway were going to sign with the Blues. They signed the offer sheets. Edmonton had a week to match. So Edmonton went out and got creative in terms of trying to figure out what they're going to do. So here's what happened. Mm-hmm. They went out and they traded for Vasily Podkolzin from Vancouver, who likely will start in the AHL, but could eventually play a middle six role at some point. So not as good as Dylan Holloway right off the bat.
Yep.
They then went out and traded for Ty Emberton from San Jose, who's currently slotted in the bottom pairings. They do like this kid. He probably will start with the NHL club because they don't really have very many other options.
Yep.
But Emberton is nothing to really sort of write home about when comparing him to Philip Broberg.
Hey, they have no plans to get this guy in the NHL because they've got their six defensemen for some reason.
Well, Emberton will apparently start there because they're not sure. Because, again, they traded Cody Ceci away. Yep. So, right? So Paul Fisher, who was playing in the NCAA for Notre Dame, is unsigned right now. He was one of the guys that was picked up from St. Louis in a much later trade on that. Mm-hmm. They also got a 2025 pick, a second-round 2025 pick, a third-round 2025 pick, and a third-round 2028 pick from St. Louis in all of those deals that basically came through. And added $1.3 million in net cap space after all these moves.
Mm-hmm.
So, is Edmonton better without Broberg and Holloway? Because I'm going to say no.
Not at all.
I will say yes for cap space, because we know how important cap space is. But on the ice, they took a major, I think, not a major step back, but one that will certainly be noticeable this season.
Yeah, definitely, because they've got holes. Like, those were guys that, at the very least, were injury insurance.
Sure, yeah.
Like, if a guy fell to injury, you have a good guy up front, a good guy on the back end that can jump in there and eat some minutes. Like, Broberg and Holloway were important in that playoff run, the run to the Stanley Cup final. I don't even think, though, that they're better in terms of cap space because of all of the cap restraints that they have to plan for moving forward.
Well, and they have a little bit of room to play with now. Even with Evander Kane going on LTIR to start the season, they'll have room to play with going down the stretch, which gives them a little bit of room to work with if they have to add a piece or two here and there.
But they're only going to be rentals.
Well, but even so, my question is, though, what do you give up for that now? Because you still have nothing to trade except for draft picks.
Which you need to stock the cupboards so you can have young players coming in, because you just lost two guys who were young players that came up through your system.
So to give you an idea of how bad the draft situation is in Edmonton right now, and you're probably going to laugh at this, but the Oilers started off by trading for Podkolzin. They traded away Ottawa's 2025 fourth round pick. Okay. The Oilers then went and traded for Emberton, Cody Ceci, and their 2025 third round pick to San Jose for Ty Emberton. Okay, the sweetener on that deal is that San Jose was a third round pick, because Edmonton, again, burning through draft picks like nobody thing, but nobody really cares that Cody Ceci is going to San Jose.
Very stand moment of them.
Well, nobody really cares that Cody Ceci is going to go to San Jose, and San Jose just wants the picks to continue to build their draft potential.
And they want a veteran NHL NHLer.
Yeah, I mean, but Cody Ceci's probably going to play on their third pairing, so no big deal, whatever. But here's the thing, though, and here's where things are going to sort of get a little bit crazy here, is that legitimately, if the Oilers didn't take back the second and third round pick for 2025 picks from St. Louis in those, they would have been picking in the sixth round next year. That would have been their first pick in the draft in 2025.
Oh, God.
So they virtually had to allow Broberg and Holloway walk if they were going to pick anywhere close to being in the first round in the next year's draft.
Like, it is such poor asset management.
But this is where we're getting to, in that Ken Holland mismanaged this into the ground, and now Stan Bowman's trying to move it around a little bit.
Mismanaging assets?
It's not getting better. It's only getting moved around in terms of how it looks on the ground.
Yeah. Like, trading away all the draft picks, I'm like, oh, yeah, the Stan Bowman special. You just throw all the picks away, and you bring in guys.
So they acquired essentially marginal talent for picks that they legitimately already owned.
Yep.
And then gave away good talent for picks that they absolutely needed for next season.
I cannot wait.
That's the Stan Bowman blueprint right there.
I cannot wait for Connor McDavid to leave in free agency. It's going to be so good.
2026, we could see it. And they still haven't got a deal yet for Draisaitl. So.
Man. You are doing yourself such a disservice in keeping those guys with all of, like, this horrible mismanagement of your assets. Like, just signing guys to such bad deals and bringing guys in that were way too expensive for what they offer. Like, bringing in Evander Kane, I mean, it looked good at the time, but you knew it was not going to end well.
Again, it's not ending well right now. He's going on LTIR.
Bringing in Cody Ceci. It's like, that's not going to work out for you. He's not a great NHLer. And you want him playing on your first pair with Darnell Nurse, who also is not a good signing?
I was going to say, the eight-year, $8 million a year deal for Darnell Nurse was not the right move.
That is like, that has aged as poorly as, I want to say, the Vlasic deal has aged in San Jose.
I'm going to say it's aged as poorly as milk in the sunlight.
Yeah.
Like, it's just gone sour, like, fast.
It is on the level of the Seth Jones deal in Chicago.
Yes, yeah.
Where it's like, this is a boat anchor of a deal. You overpaid for a guy that was not what you thought he was, and anyone could have told you that.
Well, Edmonton's going to have a fun season this year, so we'll figure that out. Another guy that's going to have a fun season this year might be Ryan Johansson.
Oh, God.
As we get into the Ryan Johansson saga, I'm going to break this down for everybody in terms of what's going on. Again, I'm not going to say anything negative about Johansson's production. He hasn't really been that productive. Since 2017, Johansson hasn't really done a lot.
So they're under the Stanley Cup final.
2019, Johansson has only scored 30 or more points twice and only hit the 40 or more points mark once since 2019.
Oof.
The Philadelphia Flyers waived Johansson on Wednesday, the 21st. So it gives you an idea as to what's going on in his career. But this is where things take a turn because legitimately, he is a playmaker. He's not a goal scorer. He's never really claimed to be a goal scorer. But the Flyers went ahead and placed Johansson on unconditional waivers yesterday in order to terminate his contract due to a material breach.
Mm-hmm. Terminate meaning or not yesterday, he gets whatever.
Not
nothing.
The other Wednesday.
This is not a buyout. This is a termination.
Right. We officially have found a problem with it, with what he has done or what he is doing, and it breaks the terms in his contract. We are legally,
his contract is now
allowed
void.
to break this contract.
Yeah.
Johansson and his agent Kurt Overhart, though, are grieving this move through the NHLPA due to Johansson being injured and requiring surgery. Now you might go, wait a minute, what? Like, what's going on here? Overhart released the following statement on Tuesday, not this previous Tuesday, but the Tuesday before, stating, quote, Ryan Johansson has a severe hockey injury that requires extensive surgery, which has been scheduled, unquote. Okay, remember, this is August 20th when he released that statement, that he requires surgery and has been scheduled.
Yep. I wonder when he was scheduled for that surgery.
But the question becomes, why didn't he get it done last season when he was injured?
Yes.
You already knew that he was hurt. Why didn't you get it scheduled I don't know, in March or in April or in May or in June when Philly wasn't doing anything. Mm-hmm. They didn't make the playoffs. It wasn't like he had a lot to do in the middle of June.
I'm interested in seeing when did the request come in with the surgeon to make that appointment.
You might be wondering how the Flyers simply can discard an injured player, but it seems that they never really wanted to keep Johansson after trading Sean Walker to Colorado for him. That was how they acquired him. Here's where things get a little strange, though, because yep. Johansson played in 63 games for Colorado prior to the trade, scoring 13 goals and adding 10 assists, but was apparently injured enough not to suit up for any games in Philadelphia or for Lehigh Valley, their AHL affiliate, after the Flyers, you know, mm-hmm. made the trade for him. For the record, Johansson was placed on waivers on March 6th for the purpose of being assigned to the Lehigh Valley Phantoms in the AHL. He cleared waivers on March the 7th after being acquired by Philadelphia and reappeared on the Flyers roster the next day on March the 8th. In other words, he didn't actually go to Lehigh Valley. Reason yep. being, he was injured.
Yes.
Or so he claimed. Flyers GM told Philly Hockey, quote, "He claimed to be injured when we traded for him, so we had him see the doctors. They found an injury, so now he's going to be rehabbing. You can't send a player down who's injured, so he's going to be doing rehab until, well, we don't know when." Unquote.
Okay.
So that raises eyebrows. Here's the next part that won't help Johansson's case in this whole thing, because he played 10 minutes and 58 seconds against the Chicago Blackhawks on March 4th with no apparent discomfort.
Yep.
And he took the morning skate on March the 6th, hours before he was traded later in the day at the trade deadline.
Yep.
So the guy was out there skating on an injured whatever, because we didn't get any information as to what. Mm-hmm. Apparently it's his hip, but whatever. And then we were told he requires extensive surgery in the middle of August to repair this. Seems like something's not adding
up
here.
Something doesn't make sense. I mean, we could have told you that when he was traded, and then the report was he did not report.
So Johansson has $4 million owed to him by Philly, because Nashville retained 50% of the trade or 50% of his contract in the trade to Colorado. They were going to put him on LTIR, but they can't, because he's legitimately in the middle of summer right now.
Yeah.
So because he can't be bought out, being that he's injured, Philadelphia is stuck with this contract now.
Yep. Just 1 year left on the contract?
1 year, $8 million left on the contract. Again, I'm no doctor. I have no access to Johansson's medical records. I can't be, you know, I can't tell you exactly what he's suffering. But again, later on in April, Daniel Breer was asked again if Ryan Johansson would be playing hockey for the Flyers, and he said, quote, "All I can tell you is I don't expect him to be back. I don't know exactly the situation. We're dealing with on the medical side with him right now about it. The thing for him is getting him back and being able to play at this time. He doesn't think he can play hockey. I wish I had a better answer for you," unquote.
So, to the best of Breer's knowledge, he was, in fact, injured, and they were trying to help him get surgery or at least rehab so he could come back and play next year. They were doing everything they could to get this resolved in April.
And he didn't get anything scheduled now until
August.
It's the middle of August, and he still hasn't gone for surgery. Does this not sound like Ryan Johansson does not want to play in Philadelphia?
That's exactly what it sounds like.
And yet, here we are, getting ready for training camp, and Ryan Johansson still has not got extensive surgery on whatever injury is causing him, mm-hmm. him discomfort.
Yep.
Something's wrong in this situation, yes. And I'm glad that Philly has gone ahead and terminated this contract.
Yes.
Because it does sound like Ryan Johansson does not want to live up to the terms of the contract.
No. He is actually doing the exact opposite of that.
So we'll see what happens. Keep your eye on that story, folks, because I don't know what's going to happen. But
here's the thing: is like it screams to me that he does not want to play there, and his agent is because this is Kurt Overhart we're talking about, the Cutter Gauthier guy.
Yeah.
He is trying to exhaust every loophole and little thing he can and negotiate his way so Johansson gets the full $8 million and he does not have to play in Philadelphia. And in response, he goes out and in this whole rigmarole gets caught, gets his contract terminated, so he gets nothing.
So, and by caught, here the catch is that the rumor is that footage of Ryan Johansson dancing at his own wedding was sent to the Flyers. In other words, he ain't suffering very much.
No.
And if he's hurt, what's he doing dancing at his own wedding?
Yeah. I don't expect this grievance to go well. He just lost out on $8 million when all he had to do was say, all right, I don't want to be here. Goes into Briere's office, says, hey, Danny, I don't want to be here. My agent's going to try and figure out a trade so I can get out of here.
Right. Yeah.
In the meantime, I will play so I can get paid. I want to be here. I want to
legitimately just schedule a surgery in April.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do.
Done.
Yeah.
But like he wants to, you know, he wants to have his cake and eat it too. He wants to get out of Philadelphia with his $8 million and go off somewhere else.
If you're a playmaker like Johansson, would you not want to play with Michkov who's coming in next season? Oh my God, you'd have so much fun.
You'd have so much fun and you'd get paid.
Owen Tippett, Joel Farabee, all these players, legitimately, you could be setting these guys up for goals all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. But. Go for 1 year. Get your $8 million. Put up a bunch of points. Get traded at the deadline. Maybe go to a playoff team. Go out.
Whatever.
And then sign a big deal in the summer. But instead, you want to get out of Philadelphia, but you want your money. So you try and scam the system, you get caught, and you leave with nothing.
It's not going to be pretty. So keep an eye on this one, folks. It's going to go for probably a few more months and weeks as to what's happening here. So
yep.
Keep an eye on that situation, because I'm sure the NHLPA and the NHL are going to end up in court over that one. But some quick U Sports signings. This is since the beginning of August, so we got a lot to go through here. Mm-hmm. But ECHL signings have been aplenty. We'll rip through these as quickly as we can. We'll start on the East Coast. Former Saint FX X-Men forward Declan Smith has re-signed with Wichita. Former Saint FX X-Men Josh Nelson has re-signed with Tulsa. Former Acadia X-Men forward Mason McCarty has re-signed with Rapid City. Former U-Cup winner and UQTR Patriots forward Jordan Martel has re-signed with Wheeling. Martel is actually an interesting case. After he got traded by Utah to mm-hmm. Wheeling, 47 points in 45 games. Kid lit it up. Former Ryerson Rams, a.k.a. TMU Bold, winger Fabrizio Ricci. He signed with Kalamazoo. He's played all over the world, France, UK, Romania, Italy. He's been everywhere. Former Queens Golden Gales goalie Luke Richardson has re-signed with the Greenville Swamp Rabbits. I love that name.
Yeah, I love that name.
Former Carlton Ravens defender Andrew Jarvis has signed with Atlanta. Jarvis played four seasons. He was with Allen in Tulsa as well, so it gives you an idea of where he's been. Former Brock Badgers forward Aiden McDonald. He has re-signed with Kalamazoo. Former York Lions defender Justin Bean has signed with Maine. He played in Hungary last season. Former Laurentian Voyageurs winger Dylan Fitzy has re-signed with Utah. Former Nipissing Lakers forward Parker Bowman has re-signed with Rapid City. And former Concordia Stingers defender Romain Rodzinski has re-signed with Idaho. Here's where we get to Canada West guys. Jason, mm-hmm. you can probably talk a little bit about these guys, although the first guy probably not because he never played very often. But former Mount Royal Cougars defender Kyle Powell, he signed with Utah. He played with within England last season in the NIHL 1 Whitley Warriors, basically the ECHL of England.
Yeah.
Former Regina Cougars forward Turner Ripplinger. Ripplinger?
Yeah.
Is it Ring Ripplinger?
Ripplinger.
Is it? Oh, I thought it would have been the soft G, but Turner Ripplinger, he signed a deal with Maine. Ripplinger played in the EIHL last season with the Guildford Flames.
Leaving a very good team in Guildford.
He only scored three goals and two assists with mm-hmm. Guildford as well, so maybe, you know, looking for a change of scenery a little bit, but 48 games with Regina, he's had 10 goals, 21 assists. Pretty good player for Regina as
definitely.
Well.
Definitely. A team that struggled.
They did struggle a lot.
He was a very bright spot for that team.
Former Alberta Golden Bears defender Ben Carroll has re-signed with the Orlando Solar Bears. Carroll skated in 67 mm-hmm. games with Orlando, scoring 35 points. He led all Solar Bears defenders in scoring last season. In 107 games with Alberta, Carroll tallied 42 points while helping the Bears win the U Cup in 2017-2018.
Yeah. The reason he didn't put up more is just because how loaded that defensive system was in Alberta.
Yeah.
Particularly that U Cup team. Man.
Former UBC Thunderbirds forward Carter Popoff joins Tulsa after signing a deal. Popoff led Deggendorfer SC, that's the Germany Oberliga's Deggendorfer SC, basically the AHL over in Germany, with 57 points in 48 games last season. Five seasons, 110 games the UBC, though, from 2016 to 2021. Popoff had 18 goals and 39 assists, so definitely a productive player.
Yeah, definitely. Always a threat when he had the puck. It was really good to watch.
A lot of Bison's news coming out of the ECHL as well, as former Bison's forward Cameron Nault re-signed with the Norfolk Admirals in 29 games with the Admirals last season after being traded from a couple different teams. Mm-hmm. Nolte ended up scoring 17 points in those 29 games with the Admirals. Three seasons with the Herd, he had 16 goals in 10 seasons, or 10 assists, excuse me.
Putting together a really good ECHL career.
Absolutely. Former Bison sniper Brett Davis has re-signed in Rapid City. The Rush acquired Davis in a trade that sent forward Jimmy Soper, we'll talk about him in a second, mm-hmm. to the Everblades on March 5th last season. Davis then went on to score 12 points in 17 games for Rapid City. In two seasons with the Herd, Davis had 20 goals, 26 assists, and 36 games. He was an absolute bomb. An absolute sniper bomb, like yeah. legitimately scored everywhere for the Bisons. Was one mm-hmm. of the few players who did yeah. when he was here. So
yeah,
former Bison defender Reese Harsh has re-signed in Idaho. Harsh was acquired last season on March 21st from the Jacksonville Icemen. He scored one goal, one assist in four games with the Steelheads in a short time there. In his one season with Manitoba in 21-22, Harsh had two goals, 10 assists in 15 games. Anything on Harsh that you want to add?
I just think he's a fantastic. We only got to see, obviously, you mentioned it for the one season. It was strange showing up for the first game and him not being there right. after expecting him to be there and be a really big role on the team. And after what he'd shown the year prior, it was like him and Harchy both looking fantastic for that team. And I mean, like, full credit to him going off and doing what he's doing. Great puck-moving defenseman. I think he's a fantastic player.
You mentioned Harchy. Former Bison defender Chase Harchy signed with the Utah Grizzlies after finishing last season in EIHL with Coventry Blaze. He had no points in the EIHL in his 11 games that he played there, but in four seasons with the Herd, he had 9 goals, 37 assists, and 70 games.
He, at a lot of times, was kind of the straw that stirs the drink, particularly on special teams. Has a very good penchant for going end-to-end. There were times where he was the only Bison that could get through the neutral zone and get into the offensive zone. If you can get him some open ice, watch him wheel, because he is very good.
Utah should be able to... They're looking for a couple guys like that, yeah. so Utah should be a good place for him to land. In SBHL news, Jimmy Soper, who we just mentioned, he has signed with Knoxville. Mm-hmm. He joins his brother Kyle Soper on that team.
Hey.
The former Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks forward played with three ECHL teams last season. 8 goals, 18 assists, and 64 combined games. His one OUA season, saw him score 2 goals, 2 assists, and 22 games. In other SBHL news, former York Lions and Trinity Western Spartans forward Colby Johnson signed a deal with the Pensacola Ice Pilots. Mm-hmm. Johnson suited up with the Danbury Hat Tricks last season in the Federal Prospect Hockey League. He had 2 goals, 3 assists in 5 games and 51 U Sports games over 5 seasons, though. He did have 5 goals and 5 assists. And finally, the big one that we wanted mm-hmm. to report on in SBHL news, former McEwen Griffins goaltender Ashton Abel has signed a deal with the Peoria Rivermen, defending yes. SBHL champion Peoria Rivermen. The 2-time male athlete of the year, McEwen played in 40 Canada West games over his two seasons that he was in Edmonton, going 16-22-1 with a 3.87 goals against average and an 8.95 save percentage. From everything that it looks like, mm-hmm. he should be the starter in Peoria next season.
Based
upon the other guy that they signed, he has way more experience than what's going on with the other guy.
I do not expect him to be in the SPHL for very long. I think he's going to climb the rank. He's a fantastic goaltender. He's let down by the stats because he played on a young, new McEwen Griffins team in Canada West. He was the reason that they did as well as they did. He held it down in between the pipes for McEwen. Fantastic goaltender.
Troy Coburn is the other guy that Peoria signed, but in regards to Ashton coming in, John Guy mm-hmm. Trudel, who again was the head coach of the Rivermen who won the championship last year, said, quote, Ashton Abel's a young netminder we're excited to have. He shows a lot of potential to succeed at the SPHL level, and we cannot wait to have him working with coach Eric Levine to take that next step in his development. Coburn, for anybody who thinks that there's not going to be a chance here, Coburn has all of 9 games of SPHL experience. Mm. Yeah. He has not played very much. In fact, since 2019, he hasn't played more than 600 minutes in any season, which is less than 10 games if you're doing the math. Yeah. So again, it's been a long time since Coburn's had a chance to really compete. Yeah. Ashton Abel is definitely bringing his experience with him, should be a starter there. Yep. So
totally.
Congratulations to him on signing that. That's all the signings we have, and that's pretty much all the time we have in terms of getting out of here today, yeah. Jay. So covered a lot of news. Anything you want to say before we go, though?
I mean, just congrats to all the guys that are getting their first crack at, you know, pro hockey heading into this season. It's going to be, you know, great. Hockey's right around the corner. I'm so excited. I saw recently that the Guilford Flames, they start playing in 2 weeks. The EIHL's almost back, so yeah, I'm really excited.
Mike Sorrento in there as well at the Glasgow Clan, so we'll keep an eye on that for next season in terms of what's going on. Stay tuned, though, folks. Another great show coming up here with Skippy as Free Range Radio gets underway right after our show here on this great station, 101.5 here at the University of Manitoba. I guess we're going to pretty much see kids back next week, too,
Yeah.
School starts again next week, everybody. So if you're not going to school already, a.k.a. you're not at Red River Collegiate, or Red River Collegiate, Red River Polytechnic, you'll be going back next week and enjoying that. So until then, folks, enjoy your week. Enjoy school as it starts next week. We'll be back here on Thursday here on 101.5 UMFM. It has been The Hockey Show. We'll see you next Thursday, everybody. Have a good one.
How do you find your music, what you listen to?
Radio.
You still listen to radio? Yeah.
Wait a minute. You still listen to radio?
Well, a lot of people...
Don't you?
A lot of people don't
listen. In the car.
Well, is it like, a satellite radio station, or are you listening to old kind of...
Just a little thing with a knob.
Working to keep Paul McCartney entertained, you're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg.
Ding. Radio FM.